Hey guys, and welcome back to another beautiful episode of the You in Progress podcast with a super special episode close to my heart, a personal friend, Dylan Moskovich. Hello, Dylan.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, of course, of course. So Dylan is a former Olympic athlete. He's also an Indigenous liaison, working with not only promoting and preserving Indigenous wisdom, lifestyle, advocacy even, but also the founder of HealX and also Tierra Viviente with his wife, Mariana. So welcome. I cannot wait to hear about everything and also have our audience get to know a little bit about you. I know you've impacted my life quite a bit. And I know that your story and what you're doing right now in your life is going to impact so many as well. So thank you for being here.
No, thank you for having me. And thank you for doing the work you're doing, you know, sharing stories and uplifting voices of people who are working in the space, trying to help humanity find their way. And so I commend you on your contribution.
Thank you. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, where to begin? I'm originally from Toronto, Canada. I live in Costa Rica with my wife, Mariana. I grew up, I was born and raised in Toronto. My mom is actually originally from South Africa. So I'm first generation Canadian on my mom's side. And I grew up figure skating, like the predominant journey of my upbringing was spent in an arena, a skating arena, and I'm the oldest of four, and we all were very involved in figure skating and other sports. I played other competitive sports, but figure skating was my calling. It was my identity, and I dedicated and devoted pretty much my whole life to that journey. And then when I retired in 2018, after representing Canada for 18 years. So it was a very, very long and full career, which I'm very fortunate to have survived and stayed somewhat healthy through and had the experiences that I did. I went through a pretty major transition, trying to find myself and my purpose. I threw myself into acting and modeling, and then I was broadcasting, I was teaching skating, I was doing motivational speaking for a lot of my career and afterwards. And then when the pandemic shut everything down, I really went through a deep existential crisis, a dark night of the soul, and really took that time to go inward and changed my life. Started studying different philosophical, spiritual paths of this journey inward. From Buddhism to yoga to different indigenous earth-based practices, learning from plant and fungi medicines, and made the move down here to Costa Rica to further that study and that journey of being in service to others through coaching, mentorship, and ceremony and retreat facilitation. And that's what I devote my life to now alongside my wife, Mariana, and in a very small nutshell, that's me.
Oh, that's super beautiful. You know, we've had guests that have really dedicated a large portion of their young adult life into either a degree or a belief or an achievement. You know, to find themselves in, and I know you mentioned you use the term existential crisis, and to find themselves in like a misalignment with themselves. And some of them, you know, they didn't know where that misalignment came from. They just felt it. And I'd love to know, what did you in kind of that coming to the point that you felt that maybe yourself or how you were living or whatever it would be wasn't sustainable. Like, what did that feel like to you coming to that point?
There are layers to that, as there's always layers. At the end of my career, my skating career. I was trying for one more Olympics, and 3 weeks before the national championships, where the team was to be named, a 200-pound mirror fell on my face and knocked me out, and I had stitches and I had a concussion, and I tried to compete 3 weeks later with a concussion, and I missed the Olympic team by one spot, and that was the end of my career. And that really, it took me a while to really sink into the metaphor of life dropping a giant reflection on my face. And the literal nature of that just speaks to me as to how many messages was I not receiving? How many messages were coming through? How many attempts of redirects from life was I ignoring? And that pain was probably one of the most important experiences I've had in my life. That was so important because it reframed things for me, and it took me a while to really understand the reframing. It's been a continual process. I retired in 2018, so 6 years ago, and it's been a continual process of learning. And as I learn, the layers go deeper, and there's more and new perspectives within that learning. But it was this like shedding of limiting belief systems, the lack of self-worth, the necessity for external validation to provide that temporary self-worth. I was in a sport that was judged. So literally that worth came from other people and fans. And I was very result oriented, despite the fact that I said I wasn't. I was very result oriented. I loved what I did. I really did. But those last 4 years was very difficult for me. I was struggling in this path of negativity and a lack of gratitude and frustration and falling out of love with my sport and not looking at the reflection of how I was creating that reality through my attitude, through my energy, through the way I was treating myself, through the way I was treating my skating partner, through just my experience as a whole. And so when that mirror fell on my face, it kickstarted things, and I went into acting, and the craft of acting was really the beginning of my healing journey, accessing the spectrum of emotions and celebrating what that means to be fully human as an athlete. I was a performer in figure skating, but really you focus on the emotions that make you good, that help you to be strong, and you push away the ones that don't. Hence why a lot of athletes are now speaking out about mental health issues. And yeah, that process just continued to unfold, and my behaviors, my choices, my ways in which I was carrying myself became more and more evident, and the messages became louder and louder until I really understood, oh, there is so much fulfillment in this inward journey, in this self-discovery. Why can't I dedicate all of that learned and lived experience of pursuing excellence? Why can't I let go of the excellence and just turn that dedication and devotion and discipline and studentship into learning me and finding a life of fulfillment through everything I have inside?
That's really powerful. And you had mentioned that you were almost given messages or signs, or that you were ignoring. Like, what, if you can remember, like, what were some of just the subtle ones that, you know, hindsight's 20/20, but what are some of the subtle ones that you can remember that you would ignore?
A lot of it was social. I've been a social butterfly my whole life. It's toned down, but I'm still, I love being around people. I'm a classic extrovert, and I love the energy I receive from connecting. But there was definitely a need there, and I couldn't sit still. I couldn't be by myself. The things would start to bubble, and I would fill my time. I would burn my candle at both ends. I would not give myself rest. Even as an athlete, I worked so hard, and I didn't do so well at the recovery part. I would just fit everything in because I knew I had the energetic capacity. But when I look at the ways in which I abused myself, and even abused myself emotionally in the social situations I would put myself in, the kind of relationships I would give my time to, the friendships I would give my time to, or acquaintances, I would say, for some of those situations, really putting myself in scenarios where it was being seen on surface level, and I needed more and more of it because it wasn't really filling my soul. And in many ways, I was disconnected from that depth.
That's it. That kind of reminds me of in the healing journey so far, really the journey inward that I've had in the past like 8 months, leaving my company and just not knowing where the next step was. The one thing I really resonate with your story is kind of the idea that life only meets us where we've met ourselves. And sometimes we look for, like you mentioned, validation outward or someone to, love us to fill that void where we haven't loved ourselves, or someone to acknowledge our greatness when we haven't acknowledged our own like divinity and greatness and power. And I think that's so common. Especially in a society that tells you, that the measure of yourself is on an outward scale, not based on your own inward scale. And I think that's really powerful that even the best at their sport, at their craft, can still have these like missing blocks within themselves, I guess, that they haven't met or loved or.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to a bigger societal value void. We live in a society that yearns for celebrity notoriety and fame and financial validation and many different material external things. And it's not that those things are inherently bad. It's just that it's kind of like sold to us that one, if we have all those things, we'll be happy. That happiness is the car, the house, the bank account, the people, the groups, the things. And in some ways, that's kind of harder when you do get it. And if you're not happy, it's like, what's wrong with me? I have all the things. I did all the things I was told to do. So people look for more. They go deeper. They just accumulate. And this consumerist society is really just a hunger to fill this void. And unfortunately, that void is unfillable with those empty things. It's like empty calories, the nutrient dense food isn't there. It's like just filling yourself on crackers. I guess that's kind of an interesting metaphor, but it's like searching and filling and searching and filling and grasping, and it's like looking for that deep breath that fills your lungs. It's like, oh, this is what it feels like to be present. This is what it feels like to really brush with sustainable joy.
And it's true, you can, earn or achieve, a $3 million house that I do feel that just waters $3 million worth of what it is that you're not substituting, but the lack within yourself that you're not meeting. You know, and I know for myself, that it is one of, there's one thing for someone to disprove something, a limiting belief, a pattern, a wiring, a lifestyle. There's another thing I know for myself to, for me to disprove something that I've been participating in for decades. You know, it's almost, it's powerful, but it, I think personally, it's a heartbreak and a realization almost of not self-betrayal, but for you to really break your own patterns. But it's also the most beautiful of cycles to break, I feel. In going, you know, from, you know, where you were in your, you know, sports career, and then the different avenues that it sounds like you delved into and explored. What brought you to South America, Latin America? What brought you to where you are now?
Many things. Part of it is plant medicine. I had a very powerful experience with a medicine that shattered everything. And I had my first real glimpse at the me I thought I was and watched it dissolve. And it was terrifying. I was unguided. I was not prepared. I did all the things that I now in this work say not to the opposite of what, you know, we recommend in ways of really working with these allies as medicines, as teachers. And it was exactly the way it needed to be. That dissolving led to a dissolving of the reality I saw around me. I was always a city person. I lived downtown Toronto. I was acting. I wanted to move to LA. I wanted to be in the mix of everything. And then when that happened, the world shut down 3 months later, and my heart just cracked open. And with the civil rights injustices that started happening, I started looking into factory farming and the terrible way animals were being treated in the world. Like, it was just this domino effect of truths coming through that I didn't allow myself to see. And I cried in bed for weeks. I just went through this really deep state of awareness, and the world as I knew it was melting away. And I started becoming connected to, and this happens a lot with these sacred medicines, as this reconnection with the earth, which is not separate from what we are. And I felt this longing to be connected with nature, with plants, with trees, with animals, with an environment that was full of life. And in the city, I looked around and saw nature's graveyard. I felt disconnected through the concrete, through the buildings, through the cars, through the, my nervous system became more aware of the energetic strain that it was under. And I had been to Costa Rica once, and I think I saw a show on Netflix. Maybe it was Zac Efron's Down to Earth. there was an episode. I was like, oh, interesting. This is an interesting show. And then there was this episode of him going to Costa Rica and going to visit a commune. And Stephen Brooks was guiding him through it and talking about fruit. And, you know, and I was just like, wow, I got to go back to Costa Rica. Look at all that lush life there. And my friend and I were writing an animated screenplay about two guys who get lost in the jungle and go and end up on a self-discovery, spiritual awakening journey. And we said, let's get out of here while we still can. Everything was shutting down and we left. And we traveled through the country, living out the journey of these characters. And then when we were in Costa Rica or in Nosara, we were staying in an Airbnb and we went to dinner and came back and our Airbnb had been robbed and our laptops and everything were gone. And I called the Airbnb manager the next day and said, this is random, but do you know where I can find a plant medicine ceremony? I've been looking. And she's like, that's so weird. You had asked me that. This is what I do. And it was Karina. And she said, there's a retreat. We're leading a retreat a week from now or in 5 days. And there's one spot. And I left my friends and I hopped in the car with her because she was next door. And her partner, Julian, ran the retreat. And that was my first retreat experience. And we connected. And a year later, I left my broadcasting career, ended an engagement and really went through a difficult process with that and reflecting on my own ways of being and made this massive leap and moved down here and moved in with Karina and Julian to work together to create ways to help others. And I was very inspired to help athletes with their transition too. And here I am.
That is beautiful. And what do you think changed from, it sounds that, you know, you were going with the flow to be able to just ask your Airbnb host that, you know, in the same sentence or conversation as we just got robbed, do you, like, how I need resources here, you know, and being able to be open to that.
It was a bit bold. I figured, you know, I'm in Nosara, like, it's probably commonplace conversation. And I had had, like, part of this process was I had this mentor come into my life, Vyacheslav Krystyan, who is just a dear, dear, dear friend and brother and such a pivotal guide in my life. And he was there with me through my existential crisis and awakening. And he said, you know, like, what would happen if you just chopped off your head and lived from your heart? And I was in this practice of learning to listen to that. And something inside me pinged and just said, ask. And I was like, okay. So I asked. And it literally changed the entire trajectory of my life, that question.
For some of the listeners, they've heard the term plant medicine. And of course, there are labels or misconceptions or ideology around what plant medicine is. I'd love to share what plant medicine is, what, you know, not only from your experience, but also from, you know, indigenous traditions and ancient wisdom and healing.
Yeah, this is a big conversation. We're in kind of middle of another revolution or renaissance, I guess, of these medicines, both lab created and nature created. And these medicines are allies. They have been working with humanity across the globe since time immemorial. We have evidence from thousands of years ago of tribes working with ayahuasca and iboga in Africa and mushrooms all over the planet, because psilocybin mushrooms sprout out all over the world. And many of those, the history of different tribes and different peoples having relationships with them has been lost on purpose or not on purpose. That's another conversation. The fact that we have receptors in our brain, that our bodies connect with these plants in this way that opens us up to different states of reality, different states of awareness, different accessing different ways of healing within our being, speaks of the relationship that's there. It's biological, it's mental, it's emotional, it's spiritual. These are allies. And unfortunately, greatly misunderstood, greatly abused, shunned, condemned. There have been many different peoples around the world who have risked their lives to preserve these ways, and many of them understanding that at some point humanity would need this knowledge. And it's now that we're in the middle of that time. And the indigenous people that carry forth this remembering, this wisdom, they're carrying forth thousands of years of ways of connecting with these plants for healing, for remembering who we are, for clearing the lived experiences, for helping us turn these different things that we've experienced and lived into being able to alchemize them into fuel for our transformation, the necessary growth, which I believe is the reason for life. Like everything in the universe is constantly expanding and changing and growing, and as are we. And so our active participation is to dive in and lean into our growth and see how we're able to alchemize our lived experience into fuel for that growth. You can look at the mushroom, the fungus, as a teacher in the way that it has adapted to be able to feed itself off of rocks or plastic or oil. And, you know, the boulders, the trauma that sits within us, it can teach us, can show us, oh, what are some ways that I can transform these boulders of my past into fuel for growth, food for growth. You know, that's one way of looking at it. And then when you look at these indigenous practices, ritual, ceremony, these are ways in which they bring reverence and respect and understanding the nature of the human mind and bringing ourselves back into humble reverence, into humility, into stepping in with this idea of studentship. Through the lens of animism, many of these indigenous cultures see the world through animism, where everything has a spirit, everything is alive. Therefore, it becomes a teacher. How do we learn to learn from everything around us and everything within us? These potent messages are available always. How do we learn to receive them and become more deeply aware of everything that's happening for us so that we can expand continually, we can grow continually, return to the home within ourselves of living with more joy, with more love, with more compassion, more understanding of the connection versus the illusion of separation, which is unfortunately plaguing our world, this painful separation that we are living with. How do we remember how connected we are? And these ways help us remember. They're not a magic key. They're not the answer. We have to be active participants, but they are very powerful teachers.
That is beautiful. In my journey inward and my journey on, you know, with the medicine, specifically ayahuasca so far, but that's been a big, you know, for me, I think it's been, you know, returning back to self. And it wasn't something that's like new and unfamiliar. It's something I always knew, like my essence, my essence, and getting back to that. But one big lesson I've learned, not only from you, Mariana, Karina, Julian, is my sovereignty, is the that we have the ability to make the choice. There's no amount of plant medicine or therapy or anything that will make the choice for us to live in our truth and our essence and begin to truly be in love with ourselves, so we can be in love with others, we can be in love with being part of this beautiful world and one another. You know, you are me and I am you. So it's you know, I know that for some folks it can be very intimidating to even to think of that. And you mentioned something earlier too, and it was really kind of, sorry to go back. And it was when you felt yourself super restless and finding yourself, you know, finding distractions and filling up each moment with something to do instead of being. And a lot of people, I think that's very scary for, right? We have our phones, we have the news, we have our engagements, we have whatever it is to just fill up the time to do, but never be. And it's quite beautiful that a plant shows us how to be more human, to be more of ourselves. I've always just, that's always like blown, I don't want to say even my mind, like that's always just humbled me. And even just thinking about it now, it's just really, it's something to wrap my head around, something to wrap, I don't know, my heart around. But, you know, for those who feel called to explore fungi and plant medicine, like what usually do you in working with, you know, hundreds of people, helping them, guiding them, facilitating with them, you know, what usually does a call feel like that you've heard or that you felt yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And also, you know, to touch on your point about this idea that a plant or a fungus can help us learn to be more human again. If you kind of look at it, it's this interesting paradox of being human with this consciousness, this mind that we have as this incredibly powerful tool that rules us. And so in the ways that they be, they remind us how to be, you know? So there's this aspect of being a human being, not a human doing, that is a really simple but very challenging shift to realize. When one feels a call, it can be that they hear about it and something inside them goes, oh wow, I don't know why, but that calls to me. Some people are seekers, you know. That was very much something for me, always looking for more understanding, for more, like I love to understand. Some people, it's terrifying. I say to someone, if they feel scared, it's like, yeah, that's part of the process. It's scary to look at the things you've been avoiding. It's scary for us to look at the things that we don't want to look at. But within that lie the gems of truth that help us evolve. You know, so it's this opportunity to offer our courage within fear. Beside fear is our courage. There can't be one without the other. And so that courage and that willingness that we gift to ourselves is a radical act of self-love. And so that calling can come in many different ways. And sometimes we may not be ready, and that's okay, but it will keep calling and you'll know. And it is really up to us to just listen. And even if we ignore it, it'll just get louder. It's like anything else in life. When that aspect of us wants to be heard, it will speak louder and louder until we have no choice but to listen. A mirror falling on my face is a great example for me and my lived experience. So with that calling comes now the exploration of where do I go? What do I do? Who do I trust? And this is really important. There are so many centers out there. There are so many people offering this work. There's the modernization through allopathic medicine, through psychology, through different chemical compounds. There are so many avenues. Do your due diligence. The indigenous have held this knowledge for so long. Unfortunately, their voices are not as present as they should be. Even myself sharing about this, I feel sensitive to be mindful that, like, I am not an expert. I refer to them. They are my teachers, you know? And I always advise people, go to the source. Go to the source of these medicines. If you feel called, go to the source. That's a great place to start. And within that, be mindful, because unfortunately, there are indigenous who are out of alignment too. There's the colonization of these lands has caused a lot of lack and scarcity, and within that has created that struggle for a lot of indigenous cultures. And so there are desperate people offering things that maybe aren't in integrity. So having community, finding voices that you trust to offer guidance toward sitting in these places, and trust your intuition. You know, talk to the people running these offerings first. What kind of energy do you feel? Do you feel safe talking to them? Do you feel trusting talking to them? Really listen to your intuition. It will very rarely guide you astray. And if it does, it's probably not your intuition that's guiding you astray. It's probably your mind. So yeah, you know, like take your time. There's no rush. The right time will appear and the right place will appear. And maybe for some people, I was very fortunate that I was guided toward really integrous opportunities and medicine carriers. Sometimes some people go through learning the hard way. And that can be detrimental to the relationship with the medicine and the trust in it. So really, you know, be mindful, remembering to respect and revere that these are sacred sacraments. These are powerful, powerful teachers meant to be respected in that way.
You had mentioned intuition, and especially in something as, I know for me, as now it's clear as day, like that this was like the path that I needed to take to get closer to myself and closer to humanity. But, you know, for others, it can seem very still taboo, or, you know, what are you doing, you know? And so the kind of outside perception sometimes like muddies, you know, the decision we make. I know recently I was explaining with one of my clients, I do, you know, personal development coaching and things like that as well. And so one of the ways that I was thinking about like how to listen to your intuition when you're still practicing the relationship and intimacy with your intuition was usually when I think of something, and the first kind of instinct is my intuition. It usually takes a few seconds for my brain to catch up and make some like nonsense up. But like that first like gut is usually for me, my intuition. And then whatever the blabber after, you know, is my ego or my, you know, my mind trying to scramble things. And are there any ways or suggestions that for folks to how to follow their intuition?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's like a big part of the human journey, especially in today's world. We live in such a mind-centric world. We desire to know, to categorize, to label, so that we have some semblance of control, so that we can understand everything and not be surprised, you know? I feel like this came to me once in a ceremony. The mind knows, the heart knows and the mind wants to.
Mm-hmm.
So the heart and the gut, those body, the somatic intelligence and wisdom that we carry is so underutilized in today's world. it's constantly speaking to us. And as an athlete, that was something that I didn't really understand how to listen to. It was very much like, I'm in tune with my body, but my body's enslaved. It's doing what my ego needs it to do to get what my ego wants. So there wasn't like this healthy reciprocal relationship, intimate relationship. When I started to understand how to learn to listen, it came from this realization that the understanding is a knowing that isn't a knowing, and it doesn't need to make sense yet logistically. And my mind will do whatever it wants to do to try and rationalize. And, you know, the mind is a computer that behaves in the way we train it to behave. So it's just doing what we have taught it to do. And it will try and, there are aspects of our being, if you're familiar with parts work or inner family systems, there's the, you know, that aspects of psychology, which talks about there are different aspects of us, different times in our lives, different versions of our lives that that will speak and are trying to protect us from pain, from shame, from danger. You know, like the mind will create a scenario and the body will feel the same kind of fear as if like a tiger's chasing it. And it could be just, you know, its fear of public shaming or embarrassment. And so within that, it's like rewiring that relationship. So sitting in stillness and listening, what is coming through? And without trying to sift through what's good or bad, right or wrong, just observe. Just really start to observe. When you're in your everyday life, treat that as like a meditation as well. When something arises, take a moment, acknowledge it. What is this saying? What's happening in my mind in response? Ah, isn't that interesting? Isn't that an interesting pattern? I'm learning myself more deeply, more intimately. And try not to berate yourself if you make a choice that's an old pattern. You know, like the healing is a trajectory. It's a process. It's not a destination. We're constantly in this evolution process. So, you know, we're learning as we go. Continue to encourage yourself. Continue to acknowledge when awareness creeps up and there's a new awareness, there's a new opening of like, ah, I noticed that and I didn't used to notice that. That's great. That's progress. Celebrate that. You know, so journal, like really solidifying those moments of awareness when you can see and feel and hear those messages that come through that are guiding. And within that, that voice becomes louder.
How have you seen your, there's a saying like your vibe attracts your tribe. And like, how have you seen your tribe change? How have you seen your relationships change? How have you seen even the way that you view and interact with the world change since you've made this, you know, devotion to yourself, essentially?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's been a process of getting to know my value system, really fine-tuning the awareness of what's mine and what's been planted by my upbringing, my family, my society, you know, all of these different things that have informed my mind as the way I'm supposed to think. So it's been this process of going deeper into freeing my mind of those aspects that aren't me, and finding like what really resonates with me. And then that process of learning to hold that, to live that, to, you know, be in integrity to that my words, my actions, my thoughts are in alignment with those values and they're non-negotiable. That without condemnation, without judgment and separation, which can be challenging, recognizing where that isn't valued, my values aren't valued, they're not understood, they're not, you know, celebrated or in alignment, and saying that's okay. My relationship with myself is first and foremost, and my energy is very valuable. So A, I like spending time with myself now. B, who would I like to share my energy with? Is it nourishing my soul? Is it helping me to grow? Are we growing alongside each other? Do we have a level of respect and depth that I feel is in alignment with the way in which I want to live and connect with others? And not needing to hang on to things just because they've been there. It doesn't mean the love is gone. It doesn't mean those relationships weren't so beautiful in my life, and I'm still immensely grateful for them. They've led me through my journey. And how can I create space for the kind of authenticity and connection that I want to live with? It's another form of self-love. Am I listening to what my soul is asking for?
Wow. And I know for you, you're a recent newlywed. Congratulations, mazel tov.
Thank you.
Yeah. How do you think, you know, in this journey inwards, you've been able to even be able to receive a love like you have now for, just to give everybody a background. I know I'm a fan. I know everyone's a fan of Dylan and his wife, Mariana. I've been able to witness, just a glimpse of their, connection and devotion to one another. I know me and my sister, I remember we were both in awe that when we would like sit and like break bread with you guys, you know, have lunch, and you would take her plate and she was like connected, just like speaking with me or whomever it was. And, you know, I think that in a lot of relationships we see like, thank you so much. Oh my gosh, you don't have to. Thank you so much. There was none of that. There was just this is what I want to do for you. I take your tea, take your cup, whatever it is. And she was just there to receive and the love and just the act of service, even if it was little, small, whatever it is. So I always, again, this is just me going on a little tirade here, how beautiful it is to witness, but how has it been like to be able now to participate and coexist and co-create a love like that? Whereas it sounds that, you know, not too long ago, it sounds that maybe you wouldn't have been able to be in a space to even receive or identify a love like that.
Thank you. Thank you for your reflections. You're right. I wasn't able to give or receive love in that way because I wasn't giving myself love in that way. And a lot of the love I was giving was in need of receiving love. And I think to fully give love, it has to be free. And we have to continually ask ourselves and look at ourselves, like, what are these old patterns that are coming up? How are they preventing me from giving like free love? And what are the parts of my old prisons that are still, you know, permeating through into my ways of being in this continual healing and excavation? I am continuously in awe and grateful of my wife and our life and the love that we share. And it's also challenging. You know, there's definitely a shedding of this idea that beautiful love is just always easy. I think really devoting oneself to a commitment in this way is probably one of the greatest spiritual undertakings one can take. To really, like, really allow someone in, to see all the parts of you and to allow them to witness you meeting the parts of you haven't met yet, in that vulnerability, in that rawness, it requires courage. It requires trust. And there are so many layers of trust, and we talk about trust in relationships. And I didn't understand, I didn't respect trust. I didn't really get it. And the depth of trust is that you create safety for each other that is unconditional. And that love is unconditional. To really understand and create that love is to see someone in all the ways that they are and to love them for it. And to see yourself in all the ways that you respond to the sticky parts and love yourself through it. And she's my greatest teacher. And we walk this path together. So we are constantly learning as we go. We are constantly evolving as individuals and as a couple. You know, our teacher, one of our teachers from the Shipibo family that we work with, the Lopez Sanchez lineage, Maestra Inez's family, our teacher, Maestra Lila, which is one of her daughters, actually came and gave us a blessing at our wedding. And she said, in the Shipibo tradition, and she said, "You are becoming one flesh under God." That was her very sharp guidance. And it's this realization, like, what does that mean? What does that really mean? To not lose your individuality and to not lose your own needs to be able to understand your boundaries, to understand how to express those lovingly, even when it's difficult. And then also to understand that it is not just you. And in those sticky moments where the ego wants to fight to be right and wants to, wrestle with the challenges, how can you, like, in those challenging moments of chaos within your being, remember they are me. They are a part of me. I am one with them. How can I love myself and in turn love them more deeply through this, and then transform this into deeper connection, deeper trust, deeper awareness, you know, and not get so put off or scared by these challenging moments, because they are literally happening as offerings for our evolution. And so in this way, you know, relating, relationship becomes this incredible teacher in our lives. And romantic partnership is one avenue of that. But the way we relate to everything, the way we relate to food, the way we relate to exercise, the way we relate to our surroundings, to our family. You know, in Buddhism, they say, if you think you've reached enlightenment, spend 15 minutes with your family. They hold the keys to all your deepest wounds and all your buttons that, you know, you think, oh yeah, I've healed that. Blah, blah, blah. It's like, sure, let's see what happens. You know, it's so... The gift of learning what relationship, what mirrorship offers us is this continual path. And I think it's the surrender into, like, I'm learning how to climb this mountain, and it's in the climbing. That's it. I'm not trying to get anywhere. I'm just learning how to learn. And so saying thank you to this being that sheds light on the areas that I have not yet visited.
Oh, that's beautiful. And I really do feel that we can put that, you know, I don't want to say ideology, but that way of life, that way of being into anything. I know for myself, I'm dating. And, you know, recently I've had the shift where, you know, things come up and, like, wounds come up, and they feel, especially recently, I've, like, really been blessed to have felt a very deep, like, the OG of the wounds for myself. But in that, like, what a blessing it is to feel that, so then I can know it's there. And two, you know, even as we're dating or, you know, meeting others, it truly is, they're all mirrors reflecting back to ourselves, but they're also all opportunities to get back to ourself, to see what's there, to even if they last for, you know, a date or a season or a lifetime, whatever it is. But I feel like one can take what you're saying and apply that to wherever they are in their relationship with others and their relationship with self. And it really does sound too that you know, I know that we all, you know, life, even to the our last breath, is going to be a learning moment. But also this idea that, you know, to coming into relationships whole, and also with a love for your identity, because many people can get very lost in relationships, or their identity may be so permeable that it, you know, instead of evolving or metamorphosizing into something else, it kind of deforms, maybe. I don't know if that would be the correct word, but it really just shapeshifts into something that is even more misaligned with their truest self. And so I really love that you mentioned, because I put some rose colored glasses. I'm like, guys, their relationship, let me tell you about this one time I saw him take a plate from her. Very, it's like 1 second in a relationship, but still, like, I really, that was super beautiful that you shared that, because I really do feel that you can apply that to anything. That's not just you're finding you got married and that's it. This is how you're going to do it. No, you can apply that to everybody you meet, and how we're all each other's teachers, just kind of guiding us back to self. So thank you for sharing that in that way. And I feel like for me, it resonated, and others it will.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. I mean, the beautiful moments are beautiful, and definitely kindness and generosity and conscientious effort and devotion are massive aspects. And also, it's taking off the rose-colored glasses. Like, what's here? What is this? What does it mean to commit in this way? To what depth am I willing to commit and be met? You know, and in relationships, it's so interesting, because all relationships, we realize we create versions of others in our minds. And when they change, it disrupts our interpretation of who they're supposed to be.
You are right. Yes.
And thus we're causing our own suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just kind of like, how do we come back into this curiosity, this playful curiosity, like the laughing Buddha, you know, just laughing at how absurd life can be. Our minds make everything so complicated and challenging, and does it need to be that way all the time? Can we laugh? Can we laugh at it and be like, oh, look at that. Isn't that interesting? I do that. You know, to me, the life unexamined is not worth living. So the curiosity is the gateway into this awareness, which opens the door. What's waiting for us? What kind of life do we want to create? How do I want my life to feel? Forget what do I want my life to look like? Who's there? What do I have? Blah, 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 blah. No. How do I want my life to feel? How do I want to feel in my life? Empowered? Sovereign? The creator of my reality? Or, you know, a prisoner in my mind's confinement? And I want to liberate myself continuously, to expand, to learn, to grow. And I think through this, we learn deeper levels of self-respect. Who do I invite into my life, into my energy? And also within that, the understanding that I have the spaciousness, because I'm learning to love myself more deeply, to love all others regardless of what they're doing and how they're being. And that, to me, is the greatest gift we can give to the collective, to those that we love, is our own individual healing, our own understanding. Who am I in this lifetime? What am I here to gift the world? And that's my responsibility, to break free of the confinement of who I am told I'm supposed to be, and to really discover who did I come into this world to be before I was told who to be? How can I breathe life into that and creatively explore what that expression wants to be, and move with it as it shifts and changes and evolves? And relationship is a great way to
do that.
Yeah.
It's, I truly believe that like our how I don't know, like the biggest lie I think that's been told to humanity is that their power or how like infinite they are is limited, and limited infinites, infinite. Yeah. Anyways, it's an oxymoron. It's like jumbo shrimp. So you
Sure.
know, it really, I think when folks really just tap into just the idea or sitting in the energy of how infinite they are and how much of a choice they have and how they participate with their life. And yeah, I think the collective humanity, you know, there's room for everyone at the table. There's room for abundance. There's room for happiness and joy and how you live your life. You want to live your life in Manhattan in an apartment? Bless you, mama. You want to live your life in Costa Rica? Bless you, papa. Like there's room and individuality and imagination for everything possible. And I think for me, for having like to see that the light isn't at the end of the tunnel, that the light's within me, for that, that's been such a beautiful gift that I've shown and learned through myself. I just want everybody to feel that, you know, for themselves and to witness that within themselves. And I think that that's beautiful because I feel like you also, you know, that's what you're devoting your life to. And it sounds like it started with you, that you needed to see that for yourself. You couldn't have come up in here 10 years ago and you would have had a different perception of life, and a different ideology. Share now what are your initiatives that you're doing now? So in all the learning that you've had in your life and the lessons and the collective that you've brought, not only, you know, in your inner circle, but in your stratosphere, what are you doing? What are you kind of, how are you directing that energy for the greater good?
Is it okay if I touch on something you said? Okay. Thank you. I'm gonna rewind just a moment. We'll go back to that. This desire to want to share this light, this awareness is so beautiful and it's so precious, and it's becoming very popular. And I think what you said, you know, like it starts with ourselves and it doesn't stop there. I think there's a massive responsibility. I feel there's a massive responsibility in offering guidance and offering, even using the words healing to others, in recognizing that they are doing their own healing. And we continuously have to, or are invited to stay in alignment. We are invited to continually work on our own path, to remember that we have to acknowledge and work on those aspects of us that make it about us, that someone else's healing becomes now our ego's fuel to grow. And just this idea of free love, just genuinely wanting that for others, wanting that their light gets ignited. You know, a single candle can light 1,000 other candles without dimming its light. And the desire for that light, that unique, genuine expression of their light, to shine in the world, for them to enjoy their light and to share it with others, that takes work. You know, we need to, and I share that because it's also a continuous reminder for me. We always have to stay on top of this. There is a lot of ego in this world, this healing world, in the plant medicine, in the spiritual world, the communities, and it's part of the growing pains as we evolve as a collective. And I think it's really asking of us to stay committed to the individual path and share from that place of humility and yeah, humble reverence for the healing itself, and not making it about us. Yeah, thank you for allowing me to go there. I just, if it, it,
No,
that came through, and I felt it was very powerful. And, you know, some of my experiences I've had recently in different areas of this work and seeing colors come through and without judgment, it's just, yeah, okay. It's not about having drank ayahuasca this many times or done this many vipassanas or had this many ego dissolutions or whatever it is. It's like, how am I grounding that into my body and walking in this life as me in the best way I can and the highest expression that I can, continuously learning. So I think we all who devote ourselves to this work have the responsibility to have compassionate accountability with each other. That's
It
my
can be, no, thank you. And it can be like I've had to, check myself, especially as I want to share everything that like I've sat with and like and experienced. And I know one, many of those experiences are for me to sit with. They're not for, broad publication. Two, people who receive it will receive it, and people who don't, like, also beautiful. It's okay. I think everybody, needs to go on the journey and the path that they need to go on for whatever the reason is. Because we never know, like, the perfect design of everything. But it's definitely I know for myself I've had to check myself before I wreck myself. No, there is a lot there is a lot of ego a lot of the times, or like almost like an authoritarian, like based on like spirituality. And it kind of like I don't know, it feeds into like how we became separated from one another to begin with. Yeah, no, I appreciate you bringing that up. Thank you. So tell us, like, what are you doing? How, what are some initiatives that you're working on?
Yeah, some of the work I'm doing right now, I have my business that I've created called Helix, which is based on the helix, the spiral.
Yeah, I just heard you said helix, and I was like, wait a sec, you're talking about the double helix? Okay, all right,
I
that's
mean, there's
awesome.
a I love metaphor and symbolism. You know, the helix, the spiral in sacred geometry has a lot of teachings that really spoke to me at the beginning of my journey. And on my website, I share about that, the creation of that vision. And also heal X is like, I'm healing X. Whatever it is, I can heal it. I can work towards that healing. So Helix is kind of the umbrella. I offer coaching, mentorship for life, for, you know, the spiritual undertaking, the journey inward, the just wellness of the being. And then also working, you know, with people preparing and integrating medicine experiences. And then as well, I work with mindset for athletes and performing artists, helping them to find a cleaner fuel, a more sustainable fuel within them that burns their desire, you know, coming from a place of discovering wholeness and freeing themselves from some of the confinement of the mind, the pressure, the result-oriented necessity, really kind of tapping back into the love that largely I lost at the end of my career. And this healing journey has given me a lot of perspective. And so I work with young athletes and older athletes and performing artists and a desire to work more with people going through that major transition afterwards as well. And then my wife and I, Mariana, we've created Tierra Viviente, which is our collective. It's an ecosystem for individual and collective healing with you know, retreats, couples work, individuals work, and a location here in Costa Rica as well for some private work. And yeah, just being a home for people to come together and create community to support each other in these ways. We work with the indigenous family that we support, the Lopez Sanchez lineage, the Shipibo family in Peru. And so through Niue Raushapo, which is the matriarchal leader, the grandma, Maestra Inez, mm-hmm. It's her family center. And we do master plant dietas there as our own study, and we support their dietas there as well on the facilitation team. And then one of the daughters, Maestra Lila, along with another maestro, Maestro Damien, they're in the process of opening their own center called Samati Shopo, Shobo, which is outside of Iquitos in Peru. And mm-hmm. So we'll be helping them and offering some tours with some offerings in the US, and watching these things grow as they evolve, you know, many different things in the works. And then on top of that, offering some online self-paced programs. I just released through Helix a program called Becoming, and that's my Learn World's school page. Helix.earth is the school page, and there's the Becoming program in there. That's my first one, and I hope to release some more. And these are just an opportunity to work through things on your own, and there's the opportunity for personalized guidance and communal communication for those who are in the course. And I'm going to offer some collective calls as well, but really just discovering ways in which I want to express my own journey and just what I feel might be helpful to others as for them to discover their ways forward.
Oh, that's beautiful. How can I know that our listeners will be more, might be more inclined to reach out to you, even if they feel the calling? Where can they find you? How can they reach out to you? And especially if you are, you know, working alongside Ines and her family, which I always had the pleasure of a lifetime to sit in my first dieta, not the last. So I definitely would love our listeners to know how to contact you, how to start that conversation, and even, get guidance to where to go from you.
Yeah. Thank you. And my website, dylanmoskovich.com, has all the updates and info, and my newsletter. You can sign up for that on the website. And then my Learn World school page is helix.earth. And then on Instagram, I have at dylan.moskovich, and also Helix has an Instagram. I believe it's _helix_, something like that. You'll find a connection with my Dylan Moskovich.
We'll definitely page. Yeah, well, I'll share some content too, and folks should be able to find you real fast, yeah. Dylan, real fast. Okay, yeah. Good.
And then there's also tierraviviente.org, and
beautiful.
And we have an Instagram, and then also niweraushabo.com, and the Samati Shobo website will be live very soon. And it just Mariana's just launched their Instagram, and so we'll be cross pollinating and supporting, and we work with Sovereign by Nature, of course. Partnership with Karina and Julian that has grown over the last couple of years so beautifully, and so we'll be offering different activations with them. We have a culture of care call, which is open to all that we've worked with or not worked with, people with plant medicine experience or not, and it's creating this collective community of coming together and sharing in these ways of authenticity and truth. And so sovereignbynature.com has offerings. We have a couple's journey in Costa Rica here in April. Mariana and I, to be confirmed, but it looks like we're going to be doing a couple's dieta in June. And then we're also
going to so beautiful.
Different individual focused offerings as well. And so much to come.
Oh, that is so perfect. Oh, and last but not least, before we wrap up, Dylan, first of all, thank you. This has been such a lovely, beautiful conversation. I can't wait to listen to it myself. And But before we wrap up, we're still in kind of the beginning of the year. We're in February. If you were to kind of, for your intention for this year, so the year of blank, what would your year be? What's your intention for this year?
It's a very good question. Expression, authentic expression.
The
We,
year.
yeah, I think finding my true voice and way of sharing my work, and our work, as a couple, as a team. We recently left a job at a retreat center we were working at for 14 months, and it was such a beautiful experience. And in the end, we left, as we didn't feel in alignment anymore, but we left to create our own way forward. And I think this year is this really rich exploration of new collaborations, of new expressions, and also for us to create home. We have land and we want to build a home and start our family and really embark on that new journey of deep learning, as bringing a child into the world, no doubt will come with rich teachings. I am ready for that to occur.
Oh, and I am so honored to get to witness your journey. And thank you for sharing and being so vulnerable and also being such a beautiful teacher, you know. So I thank you. I know I'm in gratitude for you, towards you, and I know that you've, you know, helped many others, you know, start to go within. So
Thank you.
thank
Thank
you.
you. The feeling is mutual. I'm really grateful to be having this conversation with you, to be speaking about these topics that are, so present in my heart and obviously in yours as well. And I feel immense gratitude for you and answering the call to set forth on your journey and offering your light to the world. And yeah, it's beautiful to witness, and it's an honor to be a part of your journey, and really looking
Thank
forward
you.
to seeing how all of this unfolds.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you so much, guys. I hope everyone enjoyed our beautiful conversation. I know it's going to definitely land safely in many hearts and minds. So thank you so much, Dylan, for joining today.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and thanks for having me here.
Of course. And guess what, guys? I'll talk to you later. Bye.